Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who met his wife while training for the 400 meters in Seattle and is eating gluten-free while lusting after bread, Dave Denniston.
My name is Dave Denniston, your host, and welcome back to the latest episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. And welcome back to our fireside chat with a physician to get to know their journey, their joys, and their struggles with finances and outside of finances. And my friends, in this show, I'm really trying to dig deep and find some interesting people, some interesting doctors to speak with. And as a matter of fact, I featured this physician a few weeks ago in three blogs for physicians that you may not have heard of. So our next guest, he is one of those bloggers. He is a physician. He is a father of five, and he claims he is a bit of a finance, philosophy, and psychology junkie. And why did he start blogging? He started blogging because he wants to help other high-income parents navigate the obstacles that we all have in trying to raise well-rounded, well-adjusted, motivated, and well-educated kids. And, you know, I'm an only child myself, and I've been blessed with having all of my parents' attention growing up, and now with having two beautiful girls, one going on being a teenager, this kind of mission just really hits home for me. So I really love what he's been doing with this blog, and you know, I didn't have a sibling, so I've really missed perhaps some of these lessons along the way, and so I just can't wait to hear about his journey and his advice for us. Please help me welcome Dr. Tom Reardon from High Income Parents. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks, Dave. Really glad to be here.
Well, this is your first podcast, so we're breaking you in here, Tom, and I'm so glad you're here to share with us your wisdom and your journey. And we're going to get in some content, we're going to get in some advice, but I always feel it's great to give people a background. So tell us a little bit more about you, Tom. Where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
So I was born in Oklahoma, but we got down to Texas pretty quick, and I've spent most of my life here in Texas, which I think is a good thing. I had two younger brothers myself, but I'm the oldest, so I kind of took the lead on that. And as I grew up, my dad had a business, and my mom stayed at home with us, and so I got a little bit of business exposure. I worked with him some during summers as I was in high school. But I also had an aunt who is a physician, an anesthesiologist, and so I got a lot of influence from her. And so I went through school, and college came, and I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I like science and math and all that stuff, but business was kind of interesting too. And I had a little bit of business exposure with my dad, but I thought before I decide what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, maybe I need to look into medicine. So I asked my aunt if there were any jobs around the hospital, and she was able to put in a good word for me, and I got a job part-time while I was going to college there in Austin. And it was a pretty nice gig. Got to wear pajamas at work every day and work in the air conditioning and mess around with science and help some people out, and I just kind of slowly grew to love it, and so I thought I better apply to medical school, and here I am today.
Look at you now. So, Tom, as you're growing up, I imagine you're around your aunt. You found through her connection this job in the hospital. Were you an undergrad at that particular point, or was this still in high school?
I had just finished high school and started that summer, and I was able to continue the job throughout undergrad.
So what were you thinking, you know, in undergrad? Were you pre-med then in college, or what was that like?
I did start out, my major was zoology, just because I wasn't as into plants, but having that major enabled me to have to take the pre-med requirements, you know, kind of early on. And so, you know, there's a lot of leeway initially. And so if I did end up going into business, I don't think it would have put me too far behind. But I was able to start out in the science side. I think I kind of knew all along I like the doctor side more than the business side.
Hmm. Fascinating. So you go for your pre-med, and as you're growing up, just tell us about kind of your relationship with money. Was money something taught to you by your folks? Was it a subject among the family, like with your aunt? She was someone you were looking up to regarding finances, or what was that like for you?
You know, it wasn't discussed a lot. There was just some kind of underlying good ideas, I think, as far as not going into debt and trying to live within your means. But it was never really stressed to me in that standpoint. We weren't, I guess, quote unquote, rich, you know, growing up. We always had everything we needed, but I don't think anybody would, you know, look at us as wealthy. But, it's kind of interesting that they never really stressed the financial aspect, but it was just kind of understood that you don't do things that put you in trouble. My aunt, you know, they did very well. They weren't able to have children, and so I think I've benefited from that standpoint. And they didn't really teach me much about it. I definitely became more interested in it later on in life as I grew up. But there weren't any concrete financial lessons that were bestowed to me as a kid.
So it sounds like debt was something that was important that your folks wanted to pass on. What do you remember those conversations? What was that like that stuck with you?
Yeah, one thing I remember is as a kid, there was a formal dance and I didn't have a jacket, you know, to go to a formal dance. And so there was kind of stress because there wasn't money in the budget for me to go do that. So we were trying to figure out ways to get around that. And eventually we were able to find some extra funds to buy that so I could go to this function. It's just kind of that underlying mentality that, you know, you don't just go put something on a credit card. You need to have the money in the bank before you go and spend it.
Were you working at all? During high school or college or anything like that?
A little bit. I think this was before I had a job. But then afterwards, I did some office work for my dad, just, you know, filing and answering the phones in the summers. But not a whole lot besides that in high school.
Hmm. So you're an undergraduate and you went down a path of going to medical school. What happened for you financially kind of in that time period?
Well, thankfully, my parents helped me out with some tuition expenses, and I was able to, you know, pay for my room and board and whatnot through the hospital job and picking up some other things along the way. So I was able to graduate college without any debt. But then as you get into medical school, you know, they just filed you into the financial aid office, and there wasn't really any money available for financial aid at that point. And so I did have to borrow some money to go to medical school. But thankfully, my school was a state school and was very cheap. And then my wife and I were married in the summer between first and second year, and I affectionately refer to her as my sugar mama during medical school. So she paid for our expenses for a lot of the time. And then we didn't have to borrow too much except for tuition at that point.
Hmm. Well, that's a blessing not to have much of that going on. So it sounds like when you got out of medical school, did you have six figures plus in debt then? Or what happened with that?
I did.
Get into your pocketbook.
Yeah, I did. I think I had about $80,000 in debt once I graduated, but you know, medical school debt or just student loan debt in general was a little scary to me then, probably scarier to me then than it would be now. You know, I've talked about this on the blog, you know, looking back, would I have paid off my loans as quickly as I did? But I just kind of wanted to get those out from over my head. And so we lived pretty cheap as we graduated. When we moved from Houston over to San Antonio, we just rented a house for the first couple years, and I was going into private practice, so it took a little time to build up some revenue coming in because it wasn't a salaried position. But we just kind of threw a lot of money at those student loans as we saved up for a down payment on a house, and it all got paid off pretty quick. I don't know that I, was going like my hair on fire to get those things paid off, but I just saw a debt and I wanted to eliminate it. You know, looking back with a student loan rate, I think I had them refinanced to 3.25% at the time. And I guess I've heard of people getting even lower now, but I probably wouldn't have paid them off as quickly, you know, knowing what I know now. I didn't know as much about finance and things of that nature right when I was graduating medical school.
So tell me more about that. If you're saying you would not have paid it off as quickly, tell me more about that decision. If you would go back in time, what would you have changed?
Well, yeah, depending on who the person is, I can't fault anybody for paying off a debt. It's not the end of the world. You can certainly do a lot worse things with your money, but, just knowing what I know about investing and putting money in the market, I think it could be better used. I actually wrote a post about that, should you put money away for an emergency fund? Should you pay off debt? Maybe neither. And I might be in the maybe neither crowd at this point, but I was in the payoff debt crowd back 11 years ago.
Well, what do you make of for if you were to switch situations where a lot of physicians today, you know, I see $200,000, $250,000, $300,000 plus in student debt. Do you think if you were in that situation, would you perhaps change that knowing that nowadays, you know, as you're starting practice, a lot of times you can't get 3%. You know, a lot of times it's 5 or 6 that you're able to refinance at when you're just fresh transitioning to practice or in residency.
Right. Yeah. I see that on the student loan refinance sites that the rates are definitely higher nowadays. That's kind of the tipping point for me is about 6%. Right around there, it might be difficult to get to beat a guaranteed return of 6%. And so if you came and told me, you know, Tom, I want to get rid of the student loan debt ASAP, the least I can get is 6%, I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. If you could get lower rates, then maybe you should put it off. But at the same time, I think the mindset should be that that's essentially a mortgage. And you know, maybe you shouldn't be buying a house. I definitely don't think you should be getting a 100% loan at that point. And just, you know, looking at it at that standpoint, if you want to look at it as a mortgage and you want to get it paid down or something that wouldn't be as difficult to overcome if something happened to you, it's really definitely situational because I know some, you know, student loans will be forgiven if a disability or something like that were to happen. But yeah, I have some younger partners coming out and I hear about them with these high or, you know, mid six figure student loans. And, I advise them to, you know, seriously consider about paying that, especially if they're in the 6% range, get it down to a more manageable area at least.
Well, and I think that's great mentorship there probably is a line that you could draw in the sand and say, okay, you know, I might be able to do better than this particular percentage. And so everyone keeping that in mind is great. And certainly the more longer you're in practice, the more you might have a chance to refinance. Although with rising rates, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But anyhow, Tom, I'd love to know, as you've now been in the stage where you transitioned to practice, you were really serious about paying down your debt. What do you think was some of the best financial advice you received? Like, who were some of your mentors? It sounded like your parents instilled some good stuff in you, but you really became passionate about finance at some point? Was it through some sort of mentorship or some other doctors you talked to or something you read, or what happened to give you some really great financial advice to turn on to where you're at now?
Well, I definitely was not one of these doctors that was a genius with finance right from the get-go. I made my fair share of mistakes, and I wish I would have found some of the information a lot earlier than I did. Number one, I would say my aunt and my parents both instilled in this that once there was some extra income coming in is to pay myself first. And so I've had that mentality that, you know, investments and savings need to be one of the first things that come out of the paycheck. And I've really tried to set up, you know, either automation through my company's 401k or just savings for the kids' 529 plans or investing in a taxable account, that all those things kind of come out first. And then we look, okay, can we buy that item that we need or go on that vacation that we want to go after all that comes out? And that's really made a big difference over the last 10 years. The other thing is my aunt told me one day as we were cleaning up her, they have some lake property and I've spent a lot of time out there just doing yard work and cleaning up brush and things like that. And I guess I commented one time how, you know, how hot and sweaty and difficult we were. And she said, you know, you're going to be working the rest of your life. You might as well do something that you really like doing. And so that I kept thinking about that when I was pulling all nighters in school. But yeah, those are kind of a couple of the main things as far as financial advice that I really like.
So it sounds like what you've done well with is just having different buckets and putting money aside for that, and then kind of planning on everything else that you have after that's taken care of. Did I capture that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think paying yourself first was probably the best thing that I could tell somebody.
Mm, great advice. What about on the other side, Tom? What do you think in this journey that you've had, what's been the biggest financial mistake you made in this journey?
Oh, there's been a few, and thankfully, you know, I've had a high enough income where we've been able to recover. I've talked about this on the blog too, my not so magnificent seven mistakes, financial mistakes. I'd say probably one of the worst is investing money for family members. You know, I started out in medical school right around the dot-com era, and you know, everything was just going up, 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 and I had to get into that, and so I bought my fair share of dot-com stocks, and thankfully I didn't really have much money, and so I didn't lose much money when that all went belly up. But then as I got out and was able to invest some other funds, I got into options, and again, you know, it was a case of a doctor thinking he knows more than he really knows, and I actually did make some money initially, and my mother-in-law heard about this. And so she thought it'd be a great idea for me to invest some of her money. And so sure enough, I took on that responsibility and quickly lost all of her money. Don't worry, paid her back completely, and we're good. Thanksgiving dinners aren't awkward or anything. But that's definitely a big no-no to invest other people's money. I could see, you know, giving advice, but ultimately I think I would leave it up to each individual to make their own decisions on what they think is best with their own money.
Wow. Well, that's, I have to imagine the moment that you've talked to her must have been a hard one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it wasn't a pleasant conversation. And thankfully, again, it wasn't something that was irreconcilable or I couldn't recover from, but it's definitely not a call you want to make. Thankfully, thankfully we'd already been married for several years and I'd won her favor before that, or else I would have been in a lot of trouble if I was still just dating her daughter.
What were you feeling at that moment? You know, that were your hands shaking? You know, what was that moment like when you had to make that phone call?
Oh, I mean, initially, you know, your pride's definitely hurt, but that's another big piece of advice that I try to give my kids is you just need to step up when you're wrong and admit you're wrong. You know, people will tend to forgive you if you really were, did have their best interests at heart and you just messed up. And I think that categorized that situation for me. I really did. I wasn't trying to, to hurt her, but, you know, you just gotta take your medicine and say, this is what I did. I'm really sorry. And, I'm going to step up and we'll make it right. And we did. So.
All right. Well, let's take pause here for a second and go to our commercial break. Well, if you are like some members of my audience, you are committed to being an amazing doctor and succeeding at life. But the truth is, you've never received financial training during medical school, and you struggle with enough time to do it all. And well, my friend, about a year ago, I started offering my book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, for only $1 plus shipping. Well, this offer, it's coming to an end. And so only through the end of August, you can still pick up my book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, for only $1. That's right, the whole copy, a physical copy to hold in your hands for only $1 plus shipping. And actually, that's only just part of this incredible deal because I throw in a bonus electronic copy completely for free so you can start reading it immediately. But there's a problem. This is coming to an end. So make sure you take me up on this offer. Are you ready to pick up this book and get the financial training that you've desired? You can visit the podcast website now at www.drfreedombook.com to pick up your copy, or you can simply text Dr. Book to 44222. Don't let this podcast, my friend, be like other ones where you hear great information, you get some new ideas, but you never actually complete anything. To snag your copy now, visit www.drfreedombook.com or text Dr. Book to 44222. So with that all in mind, I think what's really great on your website is you're not just talking to physicians, you're talking to high-income parents. And there's a few articles that I thought were great where you really locked in terms of thinking about your kids and college. I'm going to link them here in the show notes. You have one that's 160 strategies to conquer college expenses and another one about travel hacking, helping you pay for college. So I highly suggest everyone check those out. And as I was reading those articles, I was wondering, it sounds like you've been setting aside some money for your kids. How are you thinking about that? You know, how important is that to you? How do you prioritize college and your kids and preparing for that, knowing that you have five?
Yeah, it's something I've put a lot of thought into, and I probably still don't have the perfect formula for this. You know, for the parents that only have one child and they're putting aside money possibly in a 529 and you can only really use that for education, or there can be some penalties involved. I think I have a little bit of an advantage there that, you know, I don't necessarily have to put away an entire chunk for every single child, but I have five. And so chances are probably somebody's going to end up going to college. I hope all of them do. But you know, it's not necessarily for everybody, and they might be able to make their way in different areas. But, you know, being a higher income earner, there's definite tax advantages to putting away money in a 529. So we've used that strategy. And, you know, I invest pretty heavily in just a total stock market fund for them because I feel like I want to take as much advantage of the tax savings there. And so I want to make as much money in there. And then the other point of that is that we do have some discretionary funds that, that we can use if for some reason there was a market downturn during a significant portion of the kids' education, that we could make it up and just cash flow part of the expenses. The other part is I think I benefited greatly from having a job and working and providing a significant portion of my own way in college. I know it's more difficult now than it used to be tuition expenses going up. I actually just wrote a blog article about that where I had to do some research and look at how quickly inflation has gone up
inflation for college versus just general inflation, right?
Right.
It's like two times outpaced it.
Right. Exactly. And so, our kids definitely have a higher burden to be able to pay their tuition. It's a lot more difficult to just say, oh, work this many hours and go to college and work at the exact same time. And being higher income earners, I think it's nice to be able to help them along that way. But I do want them to work and to, pay some of their own way. Mm. And so we're developing strategies for that. I also am a big believer in entrepreneurship, and I'm trying to help especially my older sons right now, figure out some ways to maybe make some more passive income before they even get into college, or at least have a more flexible schedule.
Well, what does that look like? How are you trying to teach them entrepreneurship?
Well, my oldest son right now is trying to launch a business now that it's summer and he's outside of his structured class schedule. We're trying to launch a business for him where he could set aside some extra funds. And so that's been a great learning opportunity, just as far as web design and marketing and all the necessary paperwork that needs to go into it. And so we'll see how that ends up here in the coming months. But besides that, just odd jobs here and there at this point with the other ones. He's 15 and the next one up is 13 now. And so we're just kind of first starting to explore what they might like to do and how can they do things that fit more around their own schedules as opposed to having to be at a certain place at a certain time.
That's great. Well, I have an idea for you. Would you like me to share it with you?
Sure.
I was just with my daughter trying to teach her an entrepreneurship lesson. And have you heard of the term FBA before, Fulfilled by Amazon?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we were listening to a episode of Smart Income podcast with Pat Flynn, which I'll link in the show notes. And this last weekend, what we did is we went to Target and we went to Walmart and we went to the clearance section. And we looked, what you could do is really, really cool. My daughter loved this part of it, is you scan with your phone items that are in the clearance section and you look to have ones that are 50% discount. So a 100% possible rate of return. And basically you turn around and you sell those on Amazon. And so I was going through a spreadsheet with her and, showing expenses and the fees that Amazon tax on. And we should be able to turn a profit with it. And we just spent just a couple $100.
Nice.
To get going. So, and there's some costs, of course, to get started, but they're really, really minimal. So might want to check that out. I'm going to do a blog post on it eventually. But anywho, I love what you're doing.
Yeah, we've done kind of a more blue-collar version of that with Craigslist with them. My older son plays the drums, and I think he's flipped two or three drum kits now for more funds on Craigslist. So, I think that's just the big part of it, just like you're doing, is just telling them to kind of think outside the box, and you don't necessarily have to go get a minimum wage job at a store or restaurant or something.
Flipping hamburgers at McDonald's, right? That's what we gotta think about. Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say that was kind of instilled in me growing up. You either go get a minimum wage job or you could go work for dad, and thought, well, at least I can work for dad for a little more than minimum wage.
Right. So here's the big question I have. When you have five kids like you do, and you're socking away money for them for college, how was that like impacting your retirement? Like, how are you thinking through that? Were you thinking that, just the kids going to college is such a huge priority for me, I'm willing to sacrifice working for a few more years for that, or a lot of years for that? How were you thinking of that, or are you thinking of that?
Sure. I, I have the advantage that I do enjoy my job. And so I don't necessarily need to be out of there by age, you know, 45 or 50 or whatnot. And so I have put a tentative plan in place that if I continue my current savings rate, I should be able to meet all my, retirement investing goals by age 52. So I think I would be completely happy with that. I could potentially even work longer than that. There's all the aspects that we don't like as doctors, taking call and, maybe doing more difficult cases or whatnot. But I could always go to a part-time after that. I definitely wouldn't mind doing that. Locums work, all those things are definitely potentials. And so I wouldn't have a problem with that. And if I ended up having to work till I was 55 to meet my retirement goals, I wouldn't have a problem with that either. So I kind of just arbitrarily thought 52 is a pretty nice goal compared to a lot of people. Maybe not if you look at the fire crowd out there, they probably say I'm over the hill, but I feel pretty good about that. That would be 22 years in practice. That's a pretty good haul, and I could hopefully I would potentially do more, and I could just tailor it around doing other things. You know, my wife and I have thought about doing mission work, and so maybe I go do anesthesia for the plastic surgeons while they're fixing kids' cleft palates and things like that, and that would be a lot of fun to me too. So that's kind of where I set my goal. So that was my initial starting point. I want to be able to save at that amount. And then after that, what's left over, I started putting away for the kids or whatever else we want to spend it on at that point. And that's just kind of how I approached it. I don't think I necessarily owe my kids a college education, but if I could help them out with it and get them out of there debt free, that would be a big benefit to me. And, just the money side of it is really, in my mind, a small portion of what makes for a good value as far as a college education. There's a lot of other strategies that we can employ that doesn't mean just throwing a bunch of money at the problem.
Well, and I firmly believe, and I've said this a few times on the podcast, that college isn't for everyone. That perhaps that some kids aren't cut out for that, and the cost is high enough today. I think it's something you really got to think about. If someone you're an anesthesiologist, someone in primary care, paying for their kids when they're making $200,000 rather than $400,000, that's a huge hit for them.
Sure.
To pay for five kids for, let's say half of their college education, depending on where the kids go, right?
So yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you are looking at more state schools and things like that. And I don't know if you knew this, but we started homeschooling our kids about 5 years ago, and there's a lot of opportunities that are becoming more and more mainstream to be able to educate our kids outside of the traditional structured setting. Whether it be a public school or a private school, or as they get into college, there's so many online opportunities and opportunities to get college credit before they even set foot on a campus that you can really do a lot beforehand. My wife and I, mostly my wife's friend, her son was able to earn so many dual credits that he's taken a year off and he's hiking the Pacific Trail and he's blogging about it right now.
Wow.
And so, I think things like that are great. Yeah, I mean, the experiences that he's going to gain from that and the knowledge that he'll gain from that, where else can you get something like that? So,
So how do you mentioned that you had this age of 52, and sounds like a great number to me, area 52. How do you come up with that number? Is it a asset type number that you came up with, and you took a percentage of it? Were you doing some sort of planning thing, where you said, hey, if I die at age 90, this is what we would need? Or how did that come about?
Well, it's pretty much just the classic 4% rule. By that point, I should be able to save, 25 times my assets. And at that point, I still haven't decided if I'm really comfortable with the 4% rule. I might be more comfortable with a 3% rule. But, you know, at that point, I should be able to have 25% or 25 times my expenses. Also, my youngest daughter will just be going to college, or she'll be 18 at that point. And so that's a nice time where it'll be down to just the missus and I. Potentially, we'll see. Hopefully, they're right. Most of them are out of the house. But
how many boomerang back? To
yeah, mom, yeah. Well, that's another educational point I need to do some blog posts on, about minimizing the boomerang effect. Although, you know, if a kid needed to come back and they could save a little bit of money, and they just pour their funds towards paying back debt or something like that, I mean, hopefully we get them all or educated so that they don't get themselves in that position. But I could see other parents, if they had to accumulate a lot of debt, or their kids did, and they were able to move back home and set up some strict criteria that, you know, say, hey, you need to be throwing X percent of your income towards your debt, and we got to have a plan to get you out of here by this many months or years or whatnot. That could be beneficial to people. I hope that we don't have to do anything like that, and we're not planning on doing anything like that. But I think that's a big part of financial management too, is being flexible. You know, there's things that are going to happen that you just can't predict. So don't be married to one idea.
Right, right. Well, and I think one idea that's been floating around my head that I've started work on a piece for this is the question of, is kind of that traditional retirement dead? And what I mean by that is, you know, we picture, you know, going golfing every day or whatever someone's passion is. That's not mine. You know, I'd probably be volunteering or spending time with the kids or grandkids or whatever. But and I really believe for many of us today, just because lack of certainty with the government and funding, and for myself personally, you know, I don't see that really being an option, just because I want to be prepared for many circumstances. Now, that might mean that later on my career might change, or there's some sort of inflection point that I flip to just doing authorship full-time rather than some of the other businesses that I have. How do you think about that concept, Tom? Do you see that traditional retirement, you know, at that 52, depending on circumstances, or how are you thinking about that concept? Is retirement dead?
I think the notion of just sitting on a beach someplace for the rest of my life reading books or watching the seagulls would pretty much drive me insane. I the things I think about are, you know, probably messing with my kids and invading their house and taking their kids, my grandkids, around to different things, and just really, I think of it as a financial independence more than a retirement, because I'd love to be healthy and strong and be able to just do, you know, the things that you want to do, but you don't have to worry about whether or not the electric bill is going to get paid because your paycheck's not coming in. That, I guess that's what I really have a view of retirement nowadays. It's not that, you know, okay, finally, I don't have to do the get up at 5:30 in the morning to be at the hospital to see my patients. And, you know, honestly, I like doing that. And so that wouldn't be bad for me. If there's some docs out there that don't like it, then I could see that. But I don't think of retirement at all like that golden years and I'm out on the golf course or anything. I just think of it more of as a financial independence where your expenses are met, and then you can kind of do what you want within reason.
Yeah, flexibility, right? You know, you have some time freedom to go with financial freedom.
Right, exactly.
So I mentioned early on, and we've made a few drops here throughout the podcast, that you have a blog, High Income Parents. So tell us a bit about that, my friend. What, Tom, was your inspiration behind that?
Well, I started that earlier this year, and the main reason, you know, maybe my kids are just stubborn, but no matter how much we try to instill in them, you know, gratitude and being able to be happy about what they have, I imagine, I hear this from other parents that their kids always want more and more and more. And I guess my kids are no different. And so no matter how many times we talk to them about that lesson, you know, they do a pretty good job, but there's always times they're kids, they mess up and they don't see how good they really have it sometimes. And I found myself talking to them about these lessons and basically that overall theme from time to time. And I thought maybe there's some other parents that could benefit from it and these financial lessons. And so the overall theme of the blog is just to educate the parents, and then hopefully their kids will be educated as well by the parents passing on things. And then as their kids get older, they'll be able to read the blog as well. And also it's nice just to hear what some of the readers are saying and the problems they have. And maybe they have problems that I never thought about, and it makes me go and think about things. And so that's a big benefit as well.
Well, you know what I love about doing this podcast, as you're kind of touching on there, it really gives you a opportunity to get to know people in a different way. But in our pre-interview chat, you mentioned that it allowed you to express yourself creatively. Talk about that a little bit. How has it allowed you to express yourself creatively?
Oh yeah, that's another big benefit. You know, as doctors, we are kind of focused on doing the right thing and science, and you can't really creatively anesthetize someone too often. And so it's nice to get out to, you know, kind of get some thoughts out of your head and maybe bounce some things off of other people about what you're thinking. And financial topics are important to me, and I really like it. And, feel like I know more about that than other things, probably medicine number one, maybe finance number two. And just combining that with being able to help our kids kind of break that cycle of entitlement and not being as financially savvy as maybe their parents were, to get to the point that they are, that they're able to provide better for their kids. That was a big goal, and that's just something that I hope I accomplish, and that people get some benefit from it.
And Tom, I know you've been doing this just for since this year, but I'm sure there's probably some popular posts. So for those that aren't familiar with your blog and want to go to highincomeparents.com, what are some posts you think they should check out to get started that might be a little different from what other people are doing out there?
Oh, well, the you know, from a college standpoint, the 160 different ways to conquer college costs, I think, is a pretty good primer to just kind of see what all is out there. Let's see, what are some other popular ones? The one about an emergency fund versus, you know, paying off debt, that's gotten a lot of views, and people like to debate that. And the one good thing that I thought I did in that post is I put a table in there about whether about four different scenarios, whether you chose to fund an emergency fund, chose to pay off debt, or just invest it, and compare the net worth. And I actually used the years that the S&P returned, or the total stock market returned, I believe from 2004 through 2009. And so we had a, you know, nice little bear market in there, and it was interesting to see how net worth was quite a bit higher with investing. But again, people might have lost their job. They might have experienced some other kind of loss during that time. So it's impossible to account for all the variables. But I thought that was a pretty good one. Those are probably the top two at this point. I tried to do some posts that are just general knowledge and that would help people. You know, there's some things about tax deductions that might benefit high income earners more than others, and tax credits that might benefit high income earners. And so I didn't really find those things laid out like that in other places, and I thought that might help. another one that kind of is influenced by the great Dave Ramsey in his baby steps. I didn't really like them. And I tailored my own for high-income parents. I think that would be a good one to check out. That's generated a little bit of debate, too.
That's great. So with that, Tom, we're starting to run short on time, but I do want to go through the quick three-question lightning round with you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So, Tom, what are the top three financial habits that you have?
Pay myself first. Don't spend more than you have. And just think about people before money.
Very good. What is a guilty pleasure that you spend money on?
I'm kind of a tinkerer and like to research things. And so I end up kind of dabbling in one area and then moving on. And so I kind of tend to dabble and spend probably a little too much money on in the certain thing that I'm dabbling on at that point. Finance, I've always been attracted to, and medicine, I've always been attracted to, and I still wake up every morning enjoying going to work. So at least I made good decisions on that time. But I've done crazy things from, woodworking to beekeeping to raising chickens. So we do some crazy stuff sometimes.
And lastly, what does being a success mean to you?
I think that being a success is when you can look back on your life and see the relationships that you've cultivated and be happy with those. That's my main priority once everything's said and done.
Very good. Well, Tom, that's the end of the lightning round. As we wrap up this interview, I have a question for you. So let's say you step back into the past and you're not a practicing anesthesiologist, you are a resident. So if you could sit down with a younger Tom, a Tom that just got matched out of medical school, what advice would you give to him?
I was thinking the number one thing is just try to embrace as much knowledge as you can at that point. I think I did a decent job of this, but I probably would have stressed it even more back then. And the thought that I had was, as this especially happened right at the end of medical school, that people expect us to really take care of folks and treat them and make them better here next year. And as you're a resident, you got about anywhere from 3 to 6 years to figure that out. In anesthesia, you get 4 years. And so even though it's tough and you're working long hours and you're just cramming your brain full of knowledge to really kind of push the envelope on how much you can learn and how much you can remember and just digest, so that maybe that fact or that experience that you have would, you know, be the thing that ends up really helping somebody.
That's great. Well, Tom, we're running out of time here, and there's so much we could cover. Any closing thoughts?
I just really appreciate you letting me come on the show and talking about the blog. I hope that people can stop by that and get some benefit from it. And if there's any questions or concerns they have or feedback, I'm always open to it. It's right there on the email me page. I'm happy to take anybody's email and discuss things.
All right, Tom, are we good?
Sounds good.
All right, my friends. Well, that wraps it up for today. So thank you, Tom, for being with us. And if someone is out there listening in the Knox podcast, I would love to tell your story, because learning from other doctors is just a wonderful way to see where you are at, where you could be doing better, and picking something new away each time. But overall, I think you'd love having guests here like Tom, hopefully, and hopefully you gain some wonderful things out of these interviews. And more than anything, I just want to make sure to thank you for taking time out of your super busy and compressed schedule to spend some time with each of us. Have any questions? Give me a holler, dave@drfreedompodcast.com. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Also, if you gain some value out of this podcast, my friend, and you are just loving this stuff, here's what I want you to do. I want you to grab your friend or your colleagues their iPhone, their iPad, their Android device, whatever they got. I want you to find the podcast link on their device, get them subscribed to this podcast, and download your favorite episodes. And then tell them, hey, if they're ticked at you, they're going to thank you later, and you can just blame it all on me if they don't. So anyhow, thank you so much for joining me. It means so much to have you take time out of your busy, out of your compressed schedule. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, this is Dave Denniston. And remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle.